death. The sound of the woman's breath as it was forced from her lungs died in the rumble of the forecast thunder. The charcoal sky exploded with light, and the woman watched as the quarter-sized hail came crashing down, severing the fiery blossoms of the red bird of paradise. Chapter 1. Special Agent Wren Bryce pulled into the parking lot of the Rocky Mountain Safe Streets Task Force office. She reached out to turn off the radio.
"Coming up next," said the presenter, "we take a look at Denver's 50 Most Wanted. The list will be released later today by the Rocky Mountain Safe Streets Task Force and the U.S. Marshal's Office."
Wren turned to her backseat passenger. "Coming up next, Misty. You and me in the office, trying to find these assholes." Misty was the black-and-white border collie she had adopted 7 months earlier when her owner was killed. Her collar had a special engraving: "I smell dead people." Misty and Wren were recent graduates of a cadaver dog training school. Misty's second time, Wren's first. But there were no plans to put her to work. For now, Misty's skills were on the down low. Wren's boss, Supervisory Special Agent Gary Detling, had given Misty security clearance for the week, so she could spend it in the office instead of Wren's temporary motel home. When Gary Detling set up the Rocky Mountain Safe Streets Task Force, the maverick in him chose a building that was a piece of Denver's agricultural history. The Livestock Exchange Building, red brick, four stories high, was one of the few buildings in Denver that had its original interior: polished marble floors and grand mahogany staircases. It started out as home to the Denver Union Stockyard Company, and 100 years on, still kept a link to its roots. The Colorado Brand Inspector's Office was on the second floor. Maverick Press was on the third. Cowboys still had a home in the Livestock Exchange Building. Gary Detling was the straightest maverick Wren knew. He had created something that shook things up, a multi-agency task force, yet he ran it with a tight grip on the reins. The 9-man, 1-woman team worked from a bullpen. There were no formal partners, but 2 years earlier, within months of Wren Bryce starting there, she had fallen into a natural group with the three men who sat around her: Cliff James, Colin Grabian, and Robbie Truax. A filing cabinet to Wren's left and one to Colin's right created a subtle break in the room to seal the deal. Wren secured Misty in her quarters and headed down the hallway to her office. She threw her coat on the stand by the door and hung her gray suit jacket on the back of her chair. Her work wardrobe was always a slim-fit black or gray suit, a top in whatever color matched her mood in the morning, and black 3-inch heels. Years earlier, Wren had bought an Armani pantsuit after a drunken lunchtime date. She had no idea where it was, but the forgeries, expertly made by her mother, Kitty, were holding up well. Cliff James was the only person in the office when Wren arrived. Cliff was ex-Jefferson County Sheriff's Department, 52 years old, a big, warm bear with a face set to perma-smile. Happy family life, happy man. Wren turned to him. "My motel room is the type of place a man called Randy would take a girl called Bonnie in his pickup on a Friday night, when her trucker husband, also called Randy, is out of town."
"Does it have a heart-shaped bed?"
said Cliff. To Randy and Bonnie, every bed is heart-shaped.
"God bless them, and the illegitimate offspring Randy the husband will unknowingly have to bring up as his own."
"The good news, however," said Wren, "is that I am leaving. I will soon have in my possession the keys to a beautiful home on Mardike Street, straight out of oldie Denver."
"How did you swing that?"
"My mom's friend, Annie, is in need of a house sitter."